As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Totally Football Show, European edition. Today, Champions League. We profile the big sides, looking forward to getting another leg over in Europe. Plus, Europa League, Madrid derby, De Clasica, one cup, two finals, Zlatan's message to the little people, Marseille and Dram, and much, much more in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Hello there, continentally minded listener. Thank you once again for being with us here on Totally. We've got a top team lined up for you. They are, as ever, Alvaro Romeo.
Hello, James. Hello, guys.
Hello to you. Julien Laurence.
Bonjour.
James Horncastle.
Hello.
Et aussi Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
Hello to you. Woof. All right. European competition's back. We've got a lot to talk about this week because there's been some big stories around the respective leagues, but also fresh set of European midweek fixtures. Woof. Jules, you're going to be at Old Trafford on Thursday.
I am indeed, James, for the big United Milan game, which we've been there before in big European games. This one is Europa League, but even with Milan depleted squad, should still be interesting.
Well, I hope so. We'll be talking about that later on. As I say, so many big stories from the weekend, though. So let's begin in traditional fashion with your moments of the weekend with Paddy Power. Alvaro.
Well, hay Liga and hay Presidente, because Barcelona has a new chairman. And let's don't forget that they didn't have one for the last 4 months because there was an interim board in there. So Joan Laporta is the man who should be guiding Barcelona to a new period, at least, which is something that Barcelona needs desperately. And it was a nice weekend for them because Barcelona won and Real Madrid and Atletico de Madrid share the points at el Derby de Madrid.
Mm, very nice. Rafa, what about the Bundesliga?
I think it has to be Leon Goretzka scoring with an improvised volley 2 minutes from time to give Bayern the lead and the win in the big game against Dortmund. Don't call it a classic, but call it a comeback, James, because Bayern were 2-0 down and still managed to win 4-2.
Brilliant. All right. Well, you can decipher all of that a little bit later for us. James Horncastle.
It's hard to choose, James, because there's so many great goals in Serie A this weekend. I mean, Crotone and Torino kind of saved them up themselves. Circe Cosmi back in the league for the first time in 9 years. I know this is very niche, so I'm going to choose Milan's win over Verona because, again, both goals from fringe players, Radek Krunic and Diego Dalot, who'll be going back to Old Trafford on Thursday with a couple of screamers. Go search them out if you haven't seen them already.
Okay. I'm relieved you didn't choose Zlatan's appearance on stage at the Ariston, but we'll come to that.
But we're all Zlatan, James. We can be Zlatan. This is his speech.
In our little way. Jules, what are you choosing?
Has to be Marseille being knocked out of the French Cup
Jules.
It's true, by Canet Roussillon from the fourth division. There's even more drama than just to say that.
Why don't you celebrate the Parisian success by the real Parisian team, Red Star Paris?
Oh yeah, they beat Lens, and that was great as well. Right where I used to work at Le Parisien, right by the offices. I've played many times on that pitch at the Stade Bauer. But Marseille losing to fourth division is even better. I mean, there's so many stories. The Canet Roussillon mascot, because they have a mascot, had a River Plate shirt to troll Pippa Benedetto, the Marseille striker who used to play for Boca Junior. Through the whole game, you can just imagine the mascot with a River Plate shirt. There's loads of other stories that I'll tell you later.
Brilliant. All right. Okay. Well, those are the moments of the weekend. We're going to begin with a bit of a nod to the Champions League coming up midweek.
The Totally Football Show European Edition's Moment of the Weekend. Brought to you by Paddy Power. Defences may be looking shaky at the moment, but Paddy's offers are rock solid. If one leg of your 4+ fold ACCA lets you down, get a free bet. Max free bet £10, minimum odds 1 to 5 per leg. Online exclusive, no shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Yep, just for the sake of argument, in case anyone had forgotten what happened 3 weeks ago, Juve went to Porto and were pretty abject, but they did get a potentially crucial away goal in what was a 2-1 victory for Sergio Conceição's Porto. Dortmund went behind in Seville, but then a screamer from the man they called Boysen and then a brace from Erling Haaland saw them win 3-2 in Andalusia. Liverpool looked comfortable winning the away leg of their tie with RB Leipzig 2-0, and there's no way they're going to blow that one, right? And Jules, what happened in Barcelona PSG?
Oh, yeah. We won 4-1. Thank you, Kylian.
Oh, no, Jules. This sounds hubristic.
I'm not going to watch. I'm not going to watch the second leg. Sounds... I'm not going to watch. It's a walk in the park. I'm not going to watch it.
It's a walk in the park. Clip that up,
yeah,
producer
clip
Charlie.
That up, producer Charlie. I'm not going to watch. I refuse to watch it. I watched Liverpool-Leipzig. Another remontada that'd be far more exciting.
Okay, so how many of these games are actually done and dusted, do you think? Closest to call is surely the one in Turin, Juventus against Porto, courtesy of Chiesa's late strike in Portugal. And James, a season-defining fixture this for Juventus and their young manager.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like it's already been a defining few days for them because on Saturday night they played Lazio and they needed to win that in order to stay on Inter's coattails because Inter really started to pull away from the pack. And I think you can take a lot from this game, this performance, because for starters, Pirlo rested Cristiano Ronaldo. And I think that was interpreted in some quarters as, you know, what's more important to Juventus? Is it the Champions League or Serie A? If he's resting Ronaldo for a game as important as this one against Lazio, it does seem to show his hand a little bit that for Juventus this season, the Champions League means everything. I think Serie A still means a hell of a lot to them as well. They went behind early in that game, which they did in Porto after 19 seconds. And this is something that keeps happening to Juventus this season. Just in the league alone, they've given up 5 goals in the first 15 minutes. So they had to come back from behind in this game. And the other thing is the lineup, which I think goes to show how many injuries that Juventus have had, because they had to play a 4-2-3-1, 4-3-3 with lots of players out of position. So, for example, you had Bernardeschi playing as a left back. Alexandra, who usually plays as a left back, was a centre back. Danilo, who usually plays as a centre back or a right back, was in midfield. And all of these things that they had to kind of get to grips with, which Pirlo said this is one of the reasons why we were slow starters and went behind. But they came back and won. And I think how they did that is really important because it was down to Morata and Chiesa. And you mentioned Chiesa's away goal in the first leg. Chiesa's been sensational over the last few weeks, scored and assisted 4 goals in his last 5 appearances. He kind of set up Morata's goal, the go-ahead goal in this game against Lazio. Morata came on in the first leg for the final 20 minutes and changed the game. He was, if Juventus were able to get themselves in a position where Chiesa could score an away goal, it was down to Morata because just he is a different kind of striker to everyone else that they have. And then I suppose in the final 10 minutes of that game, they brought an Arthur against Lazio. So he's back fit, hopefully, for this game. And he's going to be crucial because when Porto press Juventus midfield players, they panic. And he's the only one who basically doesn't panic when he's got the ball. And Bonucci as well came back for the final 10 minutes. And one of the elements of Porto's strategy in the first leg was basically to say, just let Chiellini have the ball. And we'll man mark everybody else because Chiellini can't pick a pass. And it was yeah, when they've got Bonucci, he is a centre-back who is able to play that ball between the lines, play it over the top, switch it. So all of those things, I would say, bode well. Mm. But memories of what happened last August against Lyon are still very, very fresh.
Right. Chiesa, though, what a revelation he's been. We knew he was an exciting, dynamic player coming off the wing at Fiorentina, but the way he's been, that assist you mentioned, he was like doing a little roulette inside the penalty box in this game. It's like his father was Edmundo, not Enrico.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And also, I mean, the hunger and desire he shows to win the ball and start the break for Morata's goal. He has really quickly assimilated kind of what it means to be a Juventus player. I find it really quite surprising how almost after every game, the player that the press office sends out to speak to the media is Federico Chiesa. And one of the reasons for that is because he's always assisting or scoring goals and he's making a mark. But I think the other is because they feel he represents what the club is about really well. He has the kind of right mentality. And yeah, you're right. I mean, he scored 10 goals this season. He got into double figures last year, but only towards the end of the campaign when for much of it, he seemed to be in this funk. His head had been turned. He was like, why am I still at Fiorentina? We're fighting against relegation. I should maybe have left the summer before. He's already in double figures now. And I think he's really kicked on since he's moved to Juventus. And I think he's one of the players that Pirlo has been using pretty well.
Okay. 2-1 then from the first leg. Porto had a victory at the weekend, 2-0 at struggling Gil Vicente. They were stunned by Braga in the second leg of their cup semi-final last Wednesday, as you probably saw, listener.
I was watching Olhanense.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, Edgar.
Right. So what do you all think? Who's going through, Juve or Porto?
I don't think Juve can bottle it like they did against Lyon last season. Surely, even if it's a different team and a different manager, this time they're going to qualify. They can't do it again, surely.
Of course they can cock this up. I mean, this is what's happened over the last 2 years. They lost the first leg against Atleti and they needed a hat-trick from Ronaldo, and then they still went out to Ajax, which on paper was a favourable draw. We know that Ajax went to the semi-finals that year, but given that Juventus had signed Cristiano, the thinking was they were going to go through. And against Lyon last year, okay, the penalty that gets given against them in the second leg, it's never a penalty. It's another German ref against an Italian team, just like Atalanta against Real Madrid. But they gave away that early goal to Memphis Depay. And I think this is a problem, ever since Allegri got sacked, that Juventus don't win games 1-0 anymore. And in fact, they haven't won a single game 1-0 this season. And so I think it's realistic to expect that Porto may score at the Allianz. And then it becomes very difficult because aside from Cristiano in the knockout stages over the last 2.5 seasons, only one player scored for them other than him, and that's Chiesa. So I think it's tricky.
Is it easier for Porto if Chiellini and Bonucci start at the back or if it's Demiral and De Ligt? Because I could not believe that Pirlo is actually tempted to start with Bonucci and Chiellini for a game like this.
So I think that purely comes down to one thing, which is the first leg, that was the youngest Juventus team to start in the Champions League in a long, long time. And there was a feeling from the sidelines that it was very quiet, particularly when Chiellini went off after 34 minutes, that there wasn't enough leadership on the pitch. And you saw Pirlo basically shouting over to Cristiano to just pipe up a little, you know, talk, get people going. So I think in some respects, that team selection, you bring Bonucci in because he's a better passer of the ball than Chiellini is. But I think that leadership, I think they need it. But whether Bonucci's going to be fit enough after only playing 10 minutes of the weekend, we'll have to see.
Mm, indeed. Also coming up this Tuesday evening is Dortmund's clash with Sevilla, as what is a big week for the yellow and black continues.
Nico Schulz, auf! Ball in die Mitte, Haaland, 2-0, 9. Minute, BVB!
Wow, there you go. That was Dortmund on Saturday. Erling Haaland putting them 2-0 up inside the first 9 minutes. What happened then, Rafa?
Bayern happened, although they left it quite late. Dortmund were holding out until the 88th minute before Leon Goretzka, with that aforementioned wonderful little improvised volley, won the 3 points and the game for Bayern. Lewandowski's fourth a couple of minutes later was just a bit of icing, or maybe from Dortmund's point of view, a bit of scheissing on the cake.
Wow. What an image that is.
What an image.
Oh my God.
What a punchline.
It's not to be taken literally, yeah? This is all metaphorical. I mean, there's two ways of looking at this. One, you know, people saying, okay, well, Bayern completely bullied them once again and they outshot them and Dortmund didn't do much apart from those two goals. And I think that's all true. But at the same time, I think being inferior to Bayern is not something that Dortmund should really be too upset about. Bayern are just very good, even when they're not that good this season. And they've done it to loads of teams. And I think more importantly for Dortmund, it's not so much what they do against vis-a-vis Bayern, but actually the fact that they are back on track to being the second best team in Germany by quite a distance. Yes, Leipzig are ahead of them. Leipzig's results are more consistent. But when you look at the squad and you look at some of the football that they played, then Dortmund are in a league of their own above everyone else. And okay, that's where they should be. And I think they can be reasonably confident going into that Sevilla game, because since that Sevilla game, the only game they've lost is against Bayern. And that was, at least results-wise, a little bit unlucky coming late in that game. So I think there's nothing wrong with Dortmund. They can also win the German Cup then, the semi-finals, after getting by against Borussia Mönchengladbach and their future coach in midweek. So it's been...
He's doing great at the moment, isn't he?
He's doing very well. He's doing really well. Yeah.
So nothing to worry about with conceding four unanswered goals in this game and letting a 2-0, always a dangerous lead, etc. Lead slip to lose 4-2. They have a one-goal lead from the first leg. Of course, there are three away goals in the picture, which certainly is a comfort. How confident are you that they're not going to blow up in this second leg, Raf?
I'm pretty confident. I think they've defended quite well. Yes, it doesn't sound it if you concede four goals, but if you look at the other games, and I would include the Sevilla game in that, they've really been a lot more difficult to play against. I think they're working very hard, and I think they'll score a couple of goals, and then it's going to be difficult for Sevilla to score four. So I think they should be okay.
All right. Also, Sevilla are not in the best of form at the moment. A quick word, though, before we touch on the Nervionenses, about Robert Lewandowski. If you're keeping track of his goal tally and whether he is on course to break the season goal record in the Bundesliga, currently earned by one G. Müller, he's on 31 now, Rafa. 10 games to go and 40 is the target.
Yeah, many years people have wondered whether he can do it. For one reason or the other, he nor anyone before him has been able to do it. If there is a season, it's going to be this one. If he can stay fit and healthy, and if Bayern keep playing their slightly rickety style, which I think helps them because they often fall behind a goal and then really have to go going. So there's no 1-0 or 2-0s with this Bayern team. There's more often 3-1s, 4-1s, 4-2s, which helps him when it comes to the goal scoring. So I think he can do it. The other question is, can he break Gerd Müller's all-time record of 365 goals in the Bundesliga? He's on 267 at the moment. So if you add three, maybe four more years, he could just do it. And that would be a remarkable achievement.
This season he's averaging 1.35 goals per game in the Bundesliga. So, yeah, you wouldn't put it past him.
Raf, do you think the Ballon d'Or not being designated last year and it was obviously going to go to Robert Lewandowski is still behind this kind of continual drive to, I don't know, maintain not only the consistency that he showed last year, but to even better himself, statistically at least, to put himself back in the frame to win a trophy he deserved, essentially?
I'm not so sure that is the driving force. I think winning it is and has been at the forefront of his mind, of course. He knows that I think he'll be judged again on the Champions League because scoring in the Bundesliga is not quite enough to win that accolade. But, I mean, he's been trying to do that now for almost a decade. So I wouldn't necessarily say he's playing better because of what happened or because the Ballon d'Or hasn't been awarded. That's just who he is.
All right, well, that's Bayern Munich. But Dortmund and their opponent Sevilla, Dortmund in terrific form at the moment. Alvaro, Sevilla, not so much.
No, not so much. They have been very dysfunctional lately. I think that they have a problem of identity right now after what happened against Dortmund, because the team tried to play in a certain way that didn't suit the game against Dortmund. They were basically taken on the break many times. And I think that Lopetegui, as the defeats went by, he started becoming a little bit more conservative. And I think that the most exacerbated example of that was what happened at Camp Nou in midweek against Barcelona, when Sevilla had to defend the 2-0 advantage and they ended up losing 3-0 against Barcelona in the cup, and therefore they were disqualified from the competition. Also, there are a few things that are happening in there that don't help. Papu Gómez scored a really nice goal in his second goal for Sevilla, as far as I can recall, but he hasn't been that player that makes a difference, or definitely he didn't have the impact that was expected. I guess that probably not playing a lot of football since mid-December didn't help. Then Acuña and Lucas Ocampos, they've been out for a key part of the season, the month of February, and they have been missed, and now they are back, but they are not back at their best form. Then the goalkeeper Bono got an injury, and Backlitz, who was supposed to be a great second choice goalkeeper, because last season he was the first choice goalkeeper for Sevilla, Backlitz is not the goalkeeper he was. So little by little you start adding up things here and there. Rakitic, Navas, they are a little bit out of form, perhaps because they are experienced, thus a little bit old, and that tells you what Sevilla are now. However, I don't think that they should be totally pessimistic going against Dortmund, because Dortmund also considers chances. I think that if you put them in their own box, they are not the most reliable team defensively, so they should go to Dortmund with a positive mindset, knowing that it is very difficult to get the right result against them.
This weekend, Sevilla beaten 2-1 at Elche. How big an upset is that?
Oh yeah, it's a massive upset. I mean, this is probably the worst time of Lopetegui's reign at Sevilla, definitely. I mean, number one, because they lost against Dortmund, then they didn't do the job against Barcelona, and they are basically accumulating a number of defeats in La Liga, which are affordable for them, because I believe that Real Sociedad will find it very difficult to catch with them. Sevilla is fourth on the table, but the doubts are erupting, obviously. Also, Lopetegui was never contested at Sevilla, or hasn't been contested for a year, and suddenly the doubters of Lopetegui are asking the manager for some responsibilities, maybe for his a little bit of a conservative approach to the games. If anything, Lopetegui is conservative more than daring, and that is costing them, I believe. For example, against Barcelona, you know, it's true that Barcelona managed to put them in the box and corner them in their own box, but at the same time, Sevilla didn't play with the level of adventurous approach that you would expect from a team that has been able to beat Barcelona 2-0 in the first leg of the cup. So I believe that this is a difficult time for Sevilla at this stage of the season. They can still limit the damage if they qualify for the Champions League. And they are going to Dortmund with probably not being the favourites anymore. Probably in the first leg you would say that maybe they were a slightly favourite over Dortmund, but I wouldn't write them off at all, because I believe that they have shown this season, especially before February, that they are capable as well of putting up a great fight against any team in the world.
They got knocked out of the Copa del Rey semi-finals, didn't go through to the final, but you know who did, Alvaro?
Athletic Club Bilbao.
Wow. Through to their second Copa del Rey final this year. There's a future trivia question in the making for you. So they're going to be playing last year's final in April, and then when are they going to play this year's final, which is against Barcelona?
Mid-April, the 17th of April, as far as I can recall, yeah. So they will play two finals in the space of 20 days.
Extraordinary. But these are extraordinary times.
You know, La Liga this season has been a little bit ugly, I'm sorry to say, because I should defend my own business here. But the truth is that it hasn't been as nice as some other seasons. If anything, the level of the big teams has dropped a little bit. But the cup has been right the opposite. I mean, I think that more than 30 games have been decided in the extra time. It's been such a nice competition too. And this is all down to the Spanish FA, because a year ago they decided to change the old format, which had two legs in every round, to this format in which everything is played one leg but the semifinals, and the quality of the cup and the emotion that the cup has given us as spectators has been really special.
Glad you're enjoying it, because you've got two finals coming up of it in April. Brilliant. Well, there's been loads of big Spanish news from the otherwise disappointing Liga, and we'll get on to a couple of very big stories next.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Álvaro, the Madrid derby. And big news from Barcelona. First of all, as you said earlier on, I Liga, tell us about Atletico Madrid, that brilliant Suarez opening goal and that somehow inevitable Real Madrid last-minute equaliser.
Yes, it was inevitable because Atletico de Madrid at some point they thought that it would be worth defending that 1-0, and they sat too deep and they ended up conceding a goal. I think that Atletico was far superior in the first half of the game, hence the goal of Luis Suarez after a really good pass from Marcos Llorente, and then Luis Suarez scored the goal with the outside part of the foot in front of Thibaut Courtois. It's not the first time that he's scoring a goal of this fashion. I mean, he definitely masters this kind of shot. I believe that in the second half, Real Madrid step up a little bit, especially Casemiro. I believe that he was their best player all around, and he was being the leader of Real Madrid. And then Karim Benzema, when the game was pretty much over, he decided to do something that was genius. You could call him mad if he didn't score that, but he did, because he decided to attack the center, the middle. And Atletico de Madrid have three center backs. They have two holding midfielders in that area. And still, he managed to find the corridor through the center channel. He connected 1-2 with Casemiro, and he scored the goal after doing a really nice flick to pass the ball to Casemiro. So it was very special from Karim Benzema. And I think that Atletico de Madrid had chances to kill it, or at least have chances. But they were missing the finesse in the last pass. I remember a couple of actions with, for example, Correa not giving the right ball to Luis Suarez not giving the right ball to Joao Felix, Marcos Llorente missing the last pass, and that costed them. And I think that in this game, the whole narrative for me is about the two strikers. I mean, Karim Benzema and Luis Suarez, because both are strikers born in the same year, 1987. One of them is pure talent, Karim Benzema. The other one, Luis Suarez, is something else. He's a striker who manages to get the best of pretty much every possible situation. But the more difficult for Suarez, the better for him. I think that he still struggles to do easy things easy. You could see that in the sequence of Real Madrid's goal. Atletico de Madrid had a counterattack, and Luis Suarez was running with the ball. He just had to give a very easy pass for the striker to score. He missed that easy pass, something that Luis Suarez does a lot. The ball came to Benzema, like seconds later, and he managed to do something extraordinary in a very tight space, in tight angles. So I think that the game defines both the strikers as well. Luis Suarez is capable of scoring a beautiful goal against Thibaut Courtois using a very difficult type of shot. Then he misses a very easy pass, and Karim Benzema does something even more difficult in tight spaces. So I think that both strikers were phenomenal in their own way, and this game defines what they both are about.
Okay, Connor asking, if Suarez had joined Juve in the summer, how different would La Liga and Serie A look? What do you think, James?
I think Juventus are very happy with Morata. I mean, Morata is having his best season in terms of assists. I mean, if you look at his numbers this year, I mean, I don't think there are many strikers who they'd look at and think, actually, we would have done a better job if we'd signed them.
All right, then.
Just trying to find the numbers. Where are they?
Worth reminding, James, that Karim Benzema became, on Sunday, the non-Spanish player who has played more games for Real Madrid.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he has played one more game than Roberto Carlos. And it's very difficult to survive as Real Madrid number 9 for 11 or 12 seasons. I mean, it's almost impossible, you know. It's a very demanding position. I think that as soon as you have a bad season, normally they are finding your replacement. But I was just checking the names that Karim Benzema has survived, and they are quite impressive. I mean, Higuain, Álvaro Morata, Chicharito Hernández, well, not so good, but still a good scorer. Even Luka Jovic, and Karim Benzema has always managed to be the best of them. So full praise for the Frenchman, really.
16 goals and 6 assists.
Oh, right.
Morata.
I'm glad you found them.
There you go.
So this goal from Benzema, of course, means that Atleti have only won one of their last 5 matches in all competitions, but also that Barcelona, who did win, are just 3 points behind them, although Atleti have a game in hand. But that's not the only big news for Barcelona, because they've now had their election and we have a winner. Alvaro, who is it? And what impact can we expect to see from his arrival?
Well, I think that this is like a clean break with Josep Maria Bartomeu and his acolytes, I'm going to put it that way. And they are all gone, and there is a new president, like Joan Laporta, who is the one who has a better contact with Lionel Messi. This is a president that back in when he was president before, in his previous stint, he managed to get UNICEF as a sponsor of Barcelona, but let's don't forget that before that, he was negotiating a deal with Uzbekistan, the state, for a sponsorship, and there were some human rights infringements involved in that sponsorship, apparently. So this is a man who has survived good and bad, and generally speaking, he's got a really good contact with all the former players that gave glory to Barcelona, Puyol, Xavi, Iniesta, Lionel Messi as well, Gerard Piqué, and he's expected to bring some optimistic approach to the team, because there is a 1 billion debt that is there. They will have to find imaginative ways of tackling it, and this is a team that has to solve a few problems that are coming up very soon, like, for example, what to do with Lionel Messi. But Joan Laporta seems to be the right man to do it, really, because he knows how to manage a football club. I mean, he did it in the past, in 2003, he made Barcelona come back from a massive debt as well. And basically he's got charisma, and he's a man too who can actually negotiate very well when it comes to deals with players. I mean, he was the man who masterminded the Ronaldinho deal altogether with Sandro Rosell. And little by little, we got to know on Monday who their board are going to be. One of them is Ferran Reverter, the general director. Okay, he's not very well known, but he's... Football director is going to be probably Mateu Alemany, the man who took Valencia all together with Marcelino to the Champions League qualification 2 seasons in a row. So some of the names dropping there, they are quite interesting. Jordi Cruyff, maybe the sporting director for Barcelona too. So little by little, we are knowing what his team is, and yeah, it's quite attractive and quite appealing.
Okay, well, he arrives just in time for an absolutely huge clash. Jules against Paris Saint-Germain.
Yeah, he will travel to Paris as well on Wednesday. He's already said, let's go to Paris and see if we can come back again like they did 4 years ago. So we'll see. It's obviously, he's quite well known in Paris. He brought Ronaldinho to Barcelona when he was at PSG as well. So I think he knows Nasser Al-Khelaifi and a lot of people at the club. Not that he likes them, but he certainly knows them well.
And only one thing, James, if I may, very quickly. I mean, there was a candidate, Victor Font, who had a really good project, apparently. And he always said that if you let me explain my project in 20 minutes, I will beat Laporta easily. And Laporta won because, I don't know if you agree with me, but lately elections are not won by which project you have, actually. I think that it's nostalgia and emotions which are winning elections lately. And Joan Laporta is exactly that.
Right, getcha. Sunlit uplands ahead for Barcelona. Very nice. We'll see if they'll begin on Wednesday at the Parc des Princes. I'm guessing, well, Jules, we know what you think. We'll see, on Wednesday. It would be possibly the most extraordinary comeback ever. Next up then, let's talk about Wednesday's other game, Liverpool-Leipzig.
Pep, what do you think of the risks of players taking part in fantasy football?
I think that... fantasy football? What is this fantasy football?
And Man City win the treble again with an incredible goal for Erling Haaland, who's just signed a 10-year contract with Man City. He said what sealed it was the long flowing locks of manager Pep Guardiola. Look at him there on the sidelines, his hair cascading down over his shoulders.
Next question.
That's one sort of fantasy football, Pep. Paddy Power.
18 plus, bigamble.org.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Rafa, we had a big chat about this on yesterday's Totally Football Show, but for anyone who missed that, let me see if I can recall some of your key points. RB Leipzig are in great form, Rafa. The only game they've not won in their last nine matches was the defeat to Liverpool. But they've been looking at Liverpool's results and going, hey, up.
Yes, I mean, they had a similar good vibe about them going into the first leg, and that didn't work out that well for them. But I think fresh from the 3-0 win away to Freiburg, which is the sort of place that you tend to stumble, even if you're one of the better sides, there is a renewed hope, of course. Is it a disadvantage, though, that the game is not at Anfield? This is what I worry about for them. They would have preferred that. So neutral grounds, maybe it's a different story. Maybe, you know, Liverpool getting out of the country, slight change of scenery will help them in the getting out of the rot that they're in.
Well,
And maybe rot as well. Mm. I think 2-0 is tricky. Yes, it's a dangerous lead, as we know. And as you like to remind us, James, but in European Cup arithmetics, I think it's going to be hard. It's going to be very hard for Leipzig to come back from that. They need at least three goals to go through. I think they've left themselves a little bit too much to do.
Fair enough, then. It's hard to argue with you there. So quickly, while we have you, because I know you've got to disappear in a second, two things I'd like to ask you about from the Bundesliga this weekend. One is, what was your view on Paulo Otavio's wonderful tackle in the Wolfsburg-Hoffenheim game? And secondly, what on earth's going on with Borussia Mönchengladbach? They've now had five defeats in a row since, coincidentally, it was announced that their manager is going to be joining the other Borussia.
Well, just like you, James, I enjoy the sight of a tackle flying in from behind. And this certainly was...
Are you going to leave that in, easy, so to speak?
That was so easy, James. You knew it.
And this was a throwback to, you know, kind of 1970s Intercontinental Cup, Buenos Aires, you know, Boca Juniors against, I don't know, Man United or something. Dabur was clean on goal, the Hoffenheim striker, and just really just behind him, running. Paulo Otavio with a scissor kick. With a scissor pincer move, jumping in. I mean, we laugh about it, and it is funny because nothing happened. Luckily, Dabur got up and walked away and didn't even pretend that he was hurt. He knew, I think, that the red card was coming anyway for Paulo Otavio. And yeah, it is a sort of tackle that, you know, you would see on a Danny Baker VHS tape.
I was wondering which VHS you were going to go there.
Ask your parents.
Yeah, but in VHS, 2021.
Yeah.
They're still not as good as Federico Valverde on Alvaro Morata in the Spanish Super Cup, because at least that changed the game. So you do create something crazy like this, you get sent off, but your team still won. In this case, you got sent off. You were losing 2-1 at the time. Okay, you avoided to lose 3-1, but the Valverde on Morata one will, I think, stay even more forever in everybody's mind, because he actually won, in a way, Real Madrid's title.
Mm. All right. Mönchengladbach, Rafa, briefly.
Not good, James. They lost again, and this time to Leverkusen in the meeting of the two crisis teams in the Bundesliga. Peter Bosch being kept alive to fight another day by that win. But Marco Rose, difficult for him. Is there the point, even though the club want to continue with him, where you feel it might be better just to make that switch? Because Gladbach are just dropping. Now they're in mid-table, and European football is moving further and further away from them. There's a lot of anger and resentment in the organized fan base as well. And we're not just talking sort of social media outrage. I mean, the ultras are really up in arms. And it might be easier just to promote somebody from within as a caretaker manager. But I'd like to think that Gladbach can still turn it around. It's a great team. It'd be a shame if Marco Rose's two-year tenure would finish on such a low note.
Okay then, Rafa. You got to head off for a school run. So enjoy. Yeah. And for the rest of us, having dealt with the Champions League, let's hear about the Coupe de France, one of the other great European competitions.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power.
Jules, no Ligue 1 this weekend. It was the Coupe de France last 32. Woohoo! Biggest shock. Biggest shock. Let's hear it again. Marseille knocked out by fourth tier amateur side Canet Roussillon.
Incredible.
What's Canet Roussillon famous for? What's that famous for, Jules?
So they're not far from Perpignan. It's the French Catalogne. So French Catalonia. Right. It's a beautiful place by the sea. They've got a very good swimming team. Maybe their swimming team could have beaten Marseille, to be fair, because
right.
It was, as you could put it as well, a Festival de Cannes. This is a pretty good one. It's an easy one for Festival de Cannes. Do you get me? Festival de Cannes.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Pretty good. Yeah. Or as the key front page put it, that's where work of amateurs, but except that the amateurs in this case were Marseille, not the real amateurs, because all the players in this Canet-Roussillon team, football is not their job. This is not what they do. You know, they're not professional players at all. They all have work, everything you want. And it's not just that they beat Marseille, it's the way they did it. Because they were by far the better team. They dominated from pretty much the first minute to the last. And there were all those funny stories. We mentioned the mascot holding up a River Plate shirt just to troll Pippa Benedetto. Marseille asked for the grass to be cut and watered before the game, which, of course, Canet-Roussillon didn't. It's where the rugby league team, the Catalan Dragons, who have been quite successful, that's where they usually play. And we had an incredible first goal for the listeners who haven't seen it, but Jeremy Posteraro, who on the day of his 30th birthday scored a Juninho-esque free kick, which was incredible. If you haven't seen it,
ce sera pour directement. Oh, extraordinaire! Jeremy Posteraro.
We had Yohan Bai, who's a pure PSG fan, who scored the winner.
Pour Bai! Oh, c'est extraordinaire! Ça faisait plusieurs moments qu'il n'avait pas investi le camp. Yohan Bai.
With the Moise Kane goal celebration. I mean, they were trolling Marseille from start to finish. It was one of best things I've ever seen.
They do the Erling Haaland.
I guess they could have. They had some people of who work at the club and some of the players' families who were allowed to be in the stadium. Very few people, but they were too noisy for Marseille, who asked for them to be either removed from the stadium or just dispatched everywhere on the ground instead of being all together. Mm. So the referee and the match delegate had to send them all over the pitch, all over the ground, so they didn't make as much noise as in the first half. I mean, for Marseille, it's a humiliation, but even all the stories around makes it even better.
Are they your new second team, Jules?
They're almost my new first team, to be fair.
This Sampaoli's first game?
He's self-isolating. So, yeah, so his debut will be on Wednesday in one of the games in hand they have in the league.
Hayes asks, does Jules think the summer looks like for Marseille after this disastrous season?
It's a very interesting one, because on Sunday morning, Franck McCourt was speaking on French television saying the objective is still to win the Champions League. And the same day, just literally 8 hours later, they get knocked out by Canet-Roussillon in the French Cup. So maybe focus on winning the French Cup first, and then let's see where we can go in the Champions League. But they've lost 120 million euros this year. So if Franck McCourt wants a competitive team for Sampaoli, which I think Sampaoli will need, because this is not a really good team.
they will need to invest money. What do you do with Dimitri Payet and Steve Mandanda and players like that who are 34, 35, who are on huge contracts? You've just renewed them, by the way. You've got young, really good young players like Bouba Camara, who at some point will leave because he's from Marseille and this is his club and his town, but he's far too good for this team. So it's a, what about Milik? Will Milik stay? I don't think Milik will stay if there's no Champions League and he's got other offers from other clubs with Champions League football, for example, especially in Italy. So it's there's so many questions, Mark, over next season and what kind of work Sampaoli could do with this team for now, between now and the end of the season, and then certainly next season, because it's all good to have a very good manager, but if you don't have the players to give him for him to be good, then it's pointless as well.
Right. Elsewhere in the round of 32 of the Coupe de France, Lorient lost to some big-name opposition. That's Le Puy Foot 43 Auvergne.
Yeah.
They're exactly. Also from the fourth tier. Some this happens minos, a yeah. lot in the Cup.
Wasn't Dimitri Payet's brother playing in the Cup as well?
Yeah, but they lost with Romorantin.
Okay. But Anthony. Le Puy Foot 43 Auvergne, Lenny Joseph with the only goal of that one, knocking out Lorient.
Yeah, that was good. But you know, the thing is, and it's the same in every country, but those teams are so good because, not because they play a lot, because actually Canet and Le Puy haven't played in the league because the league has been suspended because of the virus. So the only games they've played since October is the Cup game. So they've played three games since October and Marseille still get their bum whipped by Canet. But those teams are so good because all the players who go into academies and when they're 16, 17, 18, sometimes even I've had a first professional contract but still didn't make it, they go down to third, fourth, fifth, sixth division and make those leagues and those teams really good in the Canet team. Same with Le Puy, you had players who were Auxerre, at Rennes, at Montpellier. A lot of them, by the way, Marseille fans. But and all those rejects, it's mean to call them rejects, but who were not really good enough for Ligue 1 or Ligue 2, ended up having a decent career at lower league level, but making those teams really good then when it comes to the French Cup.
Exactly. And this is maybe why you get so many upsets every season in this competition. Another one, as mentioned at the top, a Red Star Paris out of the third tier of French football. I remember when a couple of years back they were knocking on the door of Ligue 1.
Yeah, that's right, Jimbo. Yeah. Good memory, yeah.
Third oldest club in France. So significantly older. First team in Paris.
They're Saint-Ouen, which is literally is on the border with Paris, just outside the peripheric.
Uh-huh.
So technically, you know.
Okay, but anyway, so they...
they're really good.
They knocked out Lens.
Yeah, they were 2-1 down with 10 minutes to go and they scored two goals and the winner in literally the last kick of the game pretty much. And it's a great story because, as you say, it's a very historical club who've had many issues financially, still have a very old stadium, the Stade Boer, where I played many times in my glory days, you know, scored many goals there and a lot of nutmegs. But they need at some point some more investment. Their president is doing a good job, but it's very limited because they also have a very good academy. They've got really good youth level teams and kids from the area, from Paris, and it's a really good club. So I'm glad they beat Lens, who've been one of the revelation of the season in Ligue 1.
Okay, Jules. And they'll have been delighted to see their Parisian neighbours, Paris Saint-Germain, also winning in the Cup 3-0 at Brest, with Kylian Mbappe getting another brace.
They played really well. Marco Verratti played well in the number 10 position. Neymar is back at training with Florenzi before the Barca game. And also, big mention for Ryan Cherki, who, remember, we mentioned very early on to all our listeners, who scored two goals and gave an assist in Lyon's win against Sochaux from the second division. He's still only 17, and I think he's been a bit impatient at times this season, but it's coming through nicely for him. So well done to Cherki.
All right, then. Well, next up on Totally Show, we'll talk about the Europa League coming up on Thursday. Maybe mention some big teams heading down in Serie A and hear Zlatan sing, or maybe not.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
la pelle.
Yeah, that was last Friday at the music festival, or the song festival of San Remo. That was kind of Zlatan Ibrahimovic and Sinisa Mihajlovic singing one of the classics, Io Vagabondo by the Nomads, and Amadeus and Fiorella really doing the heavy lifting there. I've got to say, James, there'd been so much build-up to the fact that Zlatan was going to be singing at San Remo, the big cultural event of the Italian year, but he kind of bottled it.
Completely.
He did, and I think what was really funny about this was Sinisa clearly did it to get one over his Serbian singing friends, because you know, we did a golazzo on Sinisa. He's a big fan of music out of Serbia. He knows a lot of the musicians there, and he knows that none of them will ever get the chance to sing at San Remo. Mm-hmm. So that's why he took it. But Sinisa also kind of was...
He was quite shy, but then
they were both really shy.
He got into it. You know, it took a while. Neither of them wanted to do the solos, and then they kind of... And then Sinisa attacked the chorus with gusto, but then Zlatan stayed there just kind of mouthing along.
Strange. I think he was waiting. It was almost like he was a kind of 90s pop star who was waiting for the track to be played over him. Rather him to be singing live instead.
He
was he looked the part, didn't he? He was there in his white dinner jacket.
Yeah. Mm.
And then he was held the mic and was smiling into camera, looking great. But then no words seemed to be coming
out.
It did look like he didn't know this was coming almost. When that's all people were waiting for, and almost like they ambushed him. And that's why I agree with James. Maybe it was not exactly the way he thought it was gonna go.
Perhaps, but you know what? A wise man once said that defeat is a part of success, and the only defeat is not trying. I say a wise man. This was Zlatan the very next day, the same man who told LeBron James that he should shut up about everything, shut up and dribble effectively. And then came out on Saturday and made this extraordinary speech. James, you were quoting from it earlier where he said, you are all Zlatan. And
The opening gambit was, I'm great. I'm Zlatan. I bet you all think that, you know, you can't get anywhere close to me and what I've done in my career. But you know what? You are all Zlatan. We are Zlatan.
I suppose
it was supposed to have some kind of quite humbling message to it, but it was just like, you can be like me if you want. And it's like, well, what happens if you don't want to be like Zlatan? If you want to be yourself or, I don't know, be someone else. The best bit, I suppose, of Zlatan's week as the guest presenter of San Remo was him motorcycling down from Milan.
Yeah,
that was amazing. I mean, that looked like Mission Impossible.
That was a genuine story. His car gets held up after there's been an accident on the autostrada, and he has to hitch a lift on the back of a passing motorcyclist vehicle.
I don't know if it was a random motorcyclist, James. A little bit like, do you remember De Laurentiis coming out of the league meeting that time and basically hailing down a moped to jump on and then telling everyone to go F themselves? No, I think Zlatan likes his motorcycles. I think this is very much part of his legend.
Anyway, he took a car after his final appearance at San Remo up to see Milan getting a 2-0 win on Saturday at Verona, which moves them back up to just 3 points behind Inter in the title race, at least while we await. Listener, you'll already know what's happened. Monday night's big clash between the Nerazzurri and the other Nerazzurri, Atalanta, which is going to be a huge one. Milan then victorious away at Verona. Not an easy place to get the win, but they've got a huge match coming up on Thursday when they travel to Old Trafford. Ibrahimovic won't be fit for that one. What do you make of their chances, James?
Well, Milan have been quite up and down in 2021. They've lost five times. But, you know, there have been performances in amongst that which would suggest they can still cause United some problems. I thought they were very good against Roma, for example. I thought this was a really tricky game against one of the most aggressive and awkward teams to play against in the league. Verona are like a mini Atalanta. And as Julian said earlier, Milan were depleted. I mean, Zlatan was in the stands. Theo Hernandez, who's probably their best player, along with Ibrahimovic, was also in the stands. They were lacking Bennacer, Tonali as well, even though Tonali's not been all that great. Rebic got injured before the game even started. And so it was about their kind of peripheral players showing up. And they scored a couple of worldies. But at the same time, Milan deserved to win. I thought tactically they were brilliant. They stopped Verona from playing. So in that sense, it kind of bodes quite well, or at least I think you'd be more confident about Milan than you were a couple of weeks ago, for example, when they lost 3-0 to Spezia and they lost 3-0 to Inter. I do think there is this feeling that that the season has caught up with them a little bit, in that they've played more games than any other team in Italy because they were in the preliminary rounds of the Europa League. They lost some of their best players to injury in November and December. And so that meant the backup players had to sort of do some heavy lifting. And then they got tired. And then when the big name players came back, they probably weren't 100%. So they haven't been able to play kind of at the intensity that they need to at Milan. And then a couple of the new signings that they signed in January have not been very good at all, Mandzukic and Mete. But yeah, this team believes in what it's doing. It's young. And I actually think sometimes they're actually better when they don't play with Zlatan. They're better when they have the kids buzzing around because they've got the energy to play how Pioli wants. And sometimes Zlatan just stands around shouting at people, waiting for the ball to come in.
Miming so, like he's expecting playback. Yeah, exactly. Jules, you're exactly. going to be there at Old Trafford.
Yeah, yeah, I'm on Thursday for French TV. I think it's a good game, and I think what I like about Milan, watching them at the weekend, is just the character. Again, without all those stars, and there were some big players missing, they were great, and I just think Franck Kessier has taken his own game to another level. I was so impressed. I've been impressed by him all season anyway, and not just for his qualities on penalties, but just doing everything in that team. And I think it's a good game, and I think maybe they play in a way where it will suit United again, a bit like we saw against City, because I still do think that this Milan team is a playing team, even without all those big players, and that can suit United and hit them on the counter more, for example, than if they were sitting deeper. But I think it's going to be a great game, and certainly over the two legs, I don't think this is going to be any easy for United or for Milan, to be fair.
I think Milan have also been consistent. I mean, I know I just said that since the turn of the year they've been up and down, but that win at the weekend, I mean, they've been very good away from home as well, but I mean, that win at the weekend, they became, I think, the fourth team since the start of 2020 to pass 100 points. The other teams to have done that are Man City, Bayern Munich and Real Madrid. So, I mean, that shows you just how consistent they have been able to get results. So, yeah, I think I agree with Jules. I think it's going to be a really interesting tie, certainly full of the kind of that 2007 flavour. So it'd be great if we could see, you know, someone like Kaká bursting through what the United defence, like he was jumping onto the tube before it was about to depart. So no, that'd be great.
Alrighty, nice. The other game's coming up on Thursday. There's Arsenal against Olympiakos again. Slavia Prague are taking on a newly crowned Scottish champions Rangers. Ajax face Young Boys. Dinamo Kiev are up against Villarreal. Spurs have Dinamo Zagreb. Roma are up against Shakhtar Donetsk, another of the narrative-laden fixtures, that, because that's Paulo Fonseca's former club. And you've got the two lowest-ranked teams, Molde and Granada, head-to-head. Ooh, Alvaro.
Yeah, this is already a success for Granada. I think that very few teams in Europe have played more games than Granada this season. Spurs, I think that is one of them. But Granada, they've been playing a lot of games with a short squad, not necessarily because they don't have enough players, but because they have been depleted by injuries and COVID. And yet, they've been able to be competitive in the Spanish Cup. They were this close to knock out Barcelona. Then in the Europa League, they managed to go through a tough one against Napoli. And I wouldn't be too surprised if two Spanish teams make it to the Europa League quarterfinals, just based on the quality of their opponents in the last 16 round, because I think that Villarreal, they are going through a very tough moment right now. In fact, on Friday, they lost to Valencia in a Valencian region derby, which was a blow for them. And Granada, they lost against Athletic Club Bilbao. I saw some signs of fatigue in them, but at the same time, they've got, I wouldn't say easy tires, all right, because that wouldn't be fair, but definitely doable tires. So it could be the strange case that the best Spanish team in the Europa League, which were Real Sociedad, they are already out. And Villarreal and Granada, they are still in the quarterfinals.
Right, Villarreal, who will be taking on Dinamo Kiev. Excellent. That's coming up on Thursday. One or two other things just before you wrap it up today. A couple of questions from you, listener. Possibly not you, listener, but you know, a couple of questions anyway. Roger asks, what's the pod think will happen with Eden Hazard? Alvaro, what's happening?
Number one, he hasn't been able to be 100% ever during his Real Madrid time. Number two, it's difficult that Real Madrid aspires to get a lot of money from him if they offload the player. So it is very likely that if no convincing offer is received for the player, which is very likely, Eden Hazard stays at Real Madrid. He's supposed to come back in 10 days, more or less, and that is going to be good for him, because probably his eyes are also in Euro 2021. But so far, it's been, unfortunately, a flop for Real Madrid, because they invested 100 million on him, and I think that he has scored maybe 3 goals for Real Madrid. He's been so badly hit by injuries.
Axel Jakobsen asks, any reaction to Mark Hamsik going to AFK Gothenburg?
I thought he would go back to Bratislava. Of all places, you think that this is one of those where you go back to, you know, where it all started, the sort of romantic route, but maybe Brescia. he fancied a bit of Sweden before.
Yeah, I'm curious what the project is at Gothenburg. I mean, I imagine he's available for free after, I don't know, you know, Chinese Super League at this moment in time. It's not what it once was in terms of the money that there was there is certainly not flowing. So I'm curious as to what the appeal of Gothenburg is, aside from the Gothenburg side that I grew up with Jesper Blomqvist and everyone. So
you watched every weekend, yeah.
Well, no, yeah, I mean, they were great in Europe in those days, Jules, as you well know. But I'm curious, do they have some kind of new benefactor? What's the pull there? I'll be watching them as much as I watched Edgar Davids's Orhanensch.
I wonder, James, this is a question for you. I mean, why do you think that his career went down this early? I mean, he was 28, 29 when he stopped playing for Napoli or playing as good for Napoli. And I don't know. He seemed to be, or he was supposed to be at the peak of his career when he was 28.
I think he's one of the best midfielders in Serie A the last decade or so. I mean, remember he was the one who became their all-time top scorer. He's a midfield player. I mean, Hamsik went to Napoli very, very young. I mean, he's one of those players who's been playing since he was, you know, in his sort of mid-teens, and was their top scorer most of the time when they were still figuring it out after they just got promoted, and they didn't have a Cavani, they didn't have a Higuain, they didn't have a Mertens. So I think he had a fantastic career. It was kind of odd to see him go and work under Rafa Benitez again, because in Naples, certainly they didn't seem to get on all that much, because Benitez wanted him to play as a 10 rather than midfielder. I thought he was great under Sarri for the first two years of Sarri. And then, yeah, I think he didn't want to go to another club in Italy, and he could have gone to Milan, he could have gone to Juventus, but I think he wanted a change. Certainly there was a lot of money going around in China at that time.
At that time. All right. Lastly, James, you mentioned before the 6-goal thriller down at Crotone, the Pitagorici, the Pythagoreans, handing their brand new manager, Sergi Cosmi, his first victory in the top flight in 9 years. I got a real shock when I was watching, when he popped up on the sidelines in those shades. Good Lord.
Those shades are amazing. I love it. Jimbo, you should get them. I mean,
do you think?
I mean,
yeah, definitely.
I don't want to make the mistake of thinking that all bald men who have beards look the same, just as that all people with long hair look the same, because
he's
don't.
A lot more. He's a beefier chap than Sergi Cosmi.
Beefcake.
And so Crotone very much bottom of the table, but now 7 points from safety after this victory. But the bottom three, and indeed the relegation race in Italy, looking pretty dramatic with. Currently, alongside Crotone, both Parma and Torino, two genuine heavyweights, they're in the bottom three.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very difficult for Parma to stay up. You know, Parma have started scoring goals, which was a real problem for them under Fabio Liverani. And then Deverso has come in, who had a reputation for keeping clean sheets. But it's the opposite. They keep scoring a couple and they keep conceding. And I think the weekend's game against Fiorentina was just so emblematic of the strife they find themselves in, because they were 2-0 down and then they got themselves 3-2 up with a goal in the 90th minute and they conceded an own goal in the 94th. I think it's going to be tough for Parma to get out of it. Torino have got a couple of games in hand. And this was the first defeat that Davide Nicola had suffered. Nicola, who's famous for great escapes. We saw that at Crotone a few years ago. We saw it at Genoa last year. And Cagliari made a managerial change, which has worked for them as well. Because after going 16 games without a win, Leonardo Semplici came in and won his first two games and they got a point against Sampdoria at the weekend. So now it's interesting because the teams down the bottom have momentum and they might pull the likes of Fiorentina in, which... Fiorentina for the last two seasons now have been drawn into a relegation battle, even though they've got so much talent on the team and a budget which really should be fighting for Europa League places.
Mm. All right, well, about 12 rounds still to go in Italy, so plenty of room for movement one way or another. Very good. For now, though, that brings us to the end of this Totally Football Show. Many thanks to Rafa, to Jules, Alvaro, James, and producer Charlie, and you, listener. We'll be back with the European show next Tuesday with another set of Champions League and Europa League fixtures to look ahead to. We'll also be back this Thursday with a regular show, of course, with reaction to this week's midweek games. For now, though, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and follow us at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of The Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on The Athletic app. The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.